Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, this is officially the last podcast
I
will ever have to bullshit around without any basketball to talk about.
That's, man, you knock on wood. You you and your fucking water shot ass.
You want to take water? You want to take
it? Oh, God, I hate how you jinx things. Like, let's not say this is the last time this will ever happen.
Right? All right.
Because maybe I'm a little paranoid here, but like,
the next time you and I talk, we will have basketball to talk about.
All right. Okay. That's the basketball gods are appeased. Thank
you. Dikembe is like, no.
No, can't take you anywhere, man.
Today's show, I promised you guys I was going to dip back into the iTunes mailbag for this episode. We had some stuff come up over the weekend, so I was not able to record on Sunday. So we're going to make up with a little bit of stuff here today and then get us all set up for next week. So we're just going to fly through as many of these questions as we can possibly get to. Today's show, as with most of our shows for the majority of this month, are brought to you by rockauto.com. Head on over there to check out everything that you might need, regardless of your background or what kind of car you're driving. Rock Auto is going to have you covered. You ready to get to going here, Pete?
Let's do it.
So the first question comes here. It's a pair of questions from Boomy the Mad Genius.
Long-time nice listener. Name.
Yeah.
That's an Avatar reference, right?
Yeah. Anthony and Pete, just wanted to affirm you. Anthony, your personable charm makes me want to bust out laughing when I'm working out or walking around campus. Good. I'm glad to help you with your core work.
Words Pete, of affirmation. I like this.
I appreciate this. There's no question actually here. We're just going
to... Just like people saying nice stuff about us.
Yeah.
Because it's so hard last few months to create content about basketball where there's no basketball.
Yeah.
So let's just have the whole pod be people saying nice things about us.
All right, we'll skip the next review then. Jack is angry. We were talking about whales. All right, so then Pete, you bring such wisdom and passion to the pod. You guys are awesome. Pair of fun questions for y'all. Now that you guys have finished Avatar: The Last Airbender, one, what is your favorite episode from the series? Two, what is your favorite wisest quote from Uncle Iroh or Iroh? Do you remember episodes well enough?
It's absolutely impossible to pick a favorite episode. Like I love this show. This is one of my all-time favorite shows, which is cool to find that, right? Like over the course of a quarantine, right? To find a show where you're like, oh my God, like I'm already on the rewatch of it, right?
Oh, are you really?
Absolutely.
Oh, man, like, we should have done that together. Let me catch up and we'll rewatch it together.
Okay.
All right.
I'm super into the show and just what it like. Remember when I used to ramble about basketball wisdoms, right? And like there being different basketball wisdoms and so the idea that there's a balance, that there's a, we talk about the basketball gods a lot, right? Like, what if that was actually a real thing, right? Like, and there was like a god of this and a god of that, right? Like,
was actually kind of fun to study for a while when I was a kid.
Right. But the idea that there are different, like, there are different representations and approaches, just like general ways of being, all of which can be good, all of which can be evil, right? And all of which can be productive, all of which can be unproductive, but just different, fundamentally different approaches. And so in terms of choosing like my favorite episodes, it's impossible because of that. Like I love so some examples, right? And it goes into Iroh. Iroh is my favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to get all emotional crying about a cartoon on the air. The one where when he's reflecting back on the passing of his son and the raid of Ba Sing Se, and like,
he was incredible.
He's a good character. He fundamentally realized the pointlessness of his previous set of values. He was a Fire Nation conqueror, right? Like he was the Dragon of the West Dragon
of the West? Yeah, I think it was like Dragon of the West. And one of the cool scenes was when he was like, do you guys know why I was Dragon of the West?
And then he just like fucks everyone up, right? Like, so he's like he's this total badass who doesn't have to, like he's so For one, he's so secure in his badassery that he doesn't have to be aggressive toward other people. In fact, it's quite the opposite. He's very loving toward mm-hmm. everybody he comes across, right? Because he's got strength, because he's got that, like, and and so that's, but he also grew up in this, like, think of a Fire Nation son, and he was supposed to be the heir to the throne, and he was raised to be a conqueror, right? And to be a fighter and to take and to get Fire Nation to spread their freedom, quote unquote, all over the world. And there are a lot of, one of the many brilliant things about the show is its parallels to colonialism in the East and the West, right? Mm-hmm. Anyway, just really brilliant show on a bunch of different levels. And his realization of he lost certain things, like the mentality that he had as that Fire Nation general took what he loved most from him, right?
Yeah.
He lost his son because, you know, in a battle, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's this pursuit of constant war, of constant expansion, of constant gimme.
Like, after losing his son, he realized like how pointless that battle was too.
Exactly.
That's what made it so painful, was just that, like, you know, that's the ultimate loss that somebody can have, is losing their son. And then to mm-hmm. like look back on it and be like, it was for nothing.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. And that realization, but then turning that into strength, like his inability to mentor his son through adulthood, he mm-hmm. transferred to Zuko, but he also transferred to strangers that he, like that whole episode, I think it's called Leaves on the Vine, or at least that's the song that he sings mm-hmm. at the end of it. He is like comforting a small child. It's like men at different stages of adulthood.
He like taught a mugger how to mug him.
Right. That? But that's the thing. It's like, but each in, there were three little vignettes like that. There's one, he comes up with the guitar, right? And he's playing mm-hmm. for the little boy to calm him down. The kids, the little boys get like progressively older. Mm-hmm. And so it's like kind of this representation of what it means to be a father.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. That's, I'm not going to go as into depth as that is, because there's just too many, frankly. Like, there's just too many. You know, there was the episode where Aang loses Appa, and you really see that passion that mm-hmm. comes out of mm-hmm. there. And you know, you see this kid again. You know, yes, he's 100 some odd years old or whatever, but still, like, a child losing their pet. And their pet being one of the things that are kind of like keeping this kid kind of hunkered down and still caring about Earth, right? And everything mm-hmm. that he's trying to save, the passion that we saw there. But I'm actually going to go a different route here. And it was actually a meme I saw recently. And it was like, it basically told you, it's a picture of Iroh. And he's like kind of smiling into the camera. And it's like, be the person Iroh knows you're capable of being. Like that, right. That made my day. You can't see something like that and not smile.
He saw the best in everybody, and that's a great quality to have.
Yeah. So that kind of answers both of those questions. Good questions there, though. The next question here, Kay Izzle says, no one cares about effing whales. We never talked about effing them. We only talked about informing you about them. To be clear, if you took from that we were talking about effing them, I would work on your listening skills. Snigs24 writes, in a hypothetical way, what would have happened if Kawhi had signed with the Lakers and Durant had stayed with the Warriors? Who do you see winning a 7-game series? And why on earth are Bay Area sports writers, podcasters, so much hate towards the Lakers? Because the Lakers have...
There's also always been like a NorCal, SoCal thing where like the intensity of how Northern California, but like they hate us way more than we hate them.
Yeah.
Right. Like there's most of my family on actually both sides, is from the Bay Area. Right. Mm-hmm. It's from New York as well. But whenever I would go up there to visit them, they'd be like, oh, where are you from? I'm like, I'm from LA. They're like, oh, what's this like intensity coming off of you by the fact that I'm from LA, right? That I was just like, hey, Bay Area is cool. We're like up there, they're like, fuck Los Angeles.
Right.
So there's just this discrepancy in that. So I think that plays into the Warriors-Lakers thing as well. What was the first part of the question with Kawhi? And
So essentially, if Kawhi had been a Laker and you have a Kawhi, LeBron, and AD team going up against like the Warriors with KD, how does that series play out?
Oh,
Let's take a second and come back to that, because that takes some thought. So we gotta look at the rosters and what they might look like and stuff. It just on we'll take a second when we come back. We'll just talk about it, like their core five against the Lakers core three here, and see how that matches up.
I actually don't know if I can answer this question.
Hmm.
Talk about somebody else on the team.
We'll figure out a way to.
Yeah, we're gonna have to out a way to talk like about free it. Agency and all that. Okay. All
yeah.
Right. Yeah. Just like set me up so that I'm not right. doing anything stupid.
Thank all right. Next segment, we try not to get Pete fired. So let's say, hypothetically, there was a player named Shawhai Schmenard.
And stop it. Do better. Try harder.
All right. No, all right. So this isn't about, like tampering to get somebody on this team. This is a purely hypothetical question in which, in some way, shape, or form, there is an alternate universe in which the Lakers employ... Kawhi Leonard.
Again. No, this one ain't gonna work either.
All right, all right. How about you ask me the question then?
Well, I'll answer the question. I want to skip the question.
Well, I can answer the question.
Anthony, what do you think? Who would win?
So you're talking about maybe one of the best equipped teams to be able to handle that particularly, you know, team where it's Steph, it's Clay, I don't know if Iggy can still be there this year, and for them to still be able to have Durant, and then Draymond, and then essentially against LeBron, Kawhi, and AD, and then whatever parts of role players that you have surrounding them in that way. I think I would put money on the more talented trio than the more balanced foursome. I have concerns about how Draymond Green would handle Anthony Davis. I think with LeBron and Kawhi, you're switchable enough, and then you're also long enough to be able to contend with Kawhi or with KD. And the Lakers would probably still employ Avery Bradley because I believe they brought him over on an exception. So
that's right.
So I think the Lakers would be able to, you know, have somebody with some length to bother Steph. And, you know, I think it's a great series. It's an all-timer. It's a classic that goes seven games. I think the Lakers win, like, if they were to play 100 times, the Lakers would win 52 and the Warriors would win 48 of them.
It's a good breakdown, Anthony.
Pete's nodding. He is, doing whatever he possibly can to not weigh in on this subject.
That's correct.
But really, he's like, he told me off the air between segments. No, I'm kidding. Never Worry 24 writes, thought of this question after sending the first, but wanted to ask, how in the bleep did you go a whole 30-minute episode about Magic Johnson and his Twitter that takes skills and was funny? It was a great podcast. I had a lot of questions when it wasn't so much that we found out that Magic wasn't sending his own tweets. And so we found out that a lot of people didn't know he wasn't sending his own tweets. So I had questions kind of wrapped up in that in and of itself, and was really excited to bring somebody on who had like inside information on what that process was like.
What was your favorite thing that Phil told you about that?
So I guess there would be times. So Phil would write out like a series of a few versions of the same tweet, right? And he would send it to the editor, who would send it up to their boss, and then it would make its way to Magic, and then it would make its way back to Phil, and it would look completely different from how it was originally.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, like, I'm just trying to think of, you know, and one of the fun things that I like to, I'm trying to be nice about this, but my actual favorite thing about this was that Philip was sending tweets as Magic Johnson and getting dunked on by all of us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And watching those mentions, like, as
dying a little inside.
Sorry, just Phil. As we're all just mercilessly dunking on Phil.
Can you imagine? It's just like,
just like, oh my God.
Damn it. Like.
And he was telling me, too, that at the time where an account existed that may or may not have echoed a lot of what Magic was putting into his Twitter accounts, that he was like watching that go down, and he would like, he would listen or he would read those tweets and say to himself, holy crap, this is actually the kind of thing I would have tweeted from the account. So yeah, I was trying to be kind of diplomatic at first, but my actual favorite thing about this is that we were all dunking on Philip and he knew about it and he couldn't say anything to us about it. Like he just had to sit there and take the L as we're all dunking on him.
This is going to be something like that. It's funny that, you know, a moment ago I think that was the first time I had to be like, I can't talk about this. That's one of the things I'm learning, that you explaining all the different levels it had to go through before a freaking tweet was published. Right. Yeah. And how different that is. That's one of the things, my more difficult learning curves with the Lakers is I'm a Laker now, right? Like what I say, it matters in a way that it did not matter before. I could just talk my shit, right? Yeah. Like, and then, so yeah, like just navigating that, like, can I talk about this? How should I phrase this? Like, it's, you got to put a lot more.
Why Schmenard wasn't doing it for you?
Yeah, that was not doing it for me. Absolutely not. Freaking Anthony.
Yeah,
but yeah, man, it's the Lakers. Like anything the Lakers do or are affiliated with, it's got extra eyeballs on it. So you gotta be respectful of that.
What's funny is, so back when, like, one of my kind of gripes, one of like 73,000 of them, I think at this point, but one of like the smaller ones was how kind of vanilla the Lakers social media team had been there for a really long time. And they started branching out and they got, you know, they had those crispy gifts, right? Crispy gifts, that, which like kind of made up for like how not clever they were being in other instances, right? And then, you know, just recently we've seen a new team come together and be behind some of the social media stuff. And we've seen them be a little bit more kind of abrasive, right? Putting the league on notice and stuff. And I remember talking to Phil specifically because this was his background. This is what he knew a lot about. And I would, you know, I would just kind of, you know, you'd see all these other teams doing these fun, you know, interactive things or talking shit to other teams, right? And you'd see snaps back and forth. And the Lakers always kind of stayed above that. And I remember like asking Philip, I remember sending a tweet out, something along the lines of like, God, how are the Lakers even boring in this respect? Because this was back when they sucked too. So it was like they sucked and their social media was boring. It was like, God, why? What is going on here? And Philip actually said, he made a really good point. He was like, look, the purpose of that social media team isn't to get some like cheap engagement on Twitter. It's to be a part of the brand, you know? Mm-hmm. And at that time, that brand was very clean cut, very, you know, the sponsors and their partnerships wanted something a little bit more clean cut. They didn't want to, you know, lower themselves to be able to get dunked on, right? Because it was a bad team. So it's not like you could go out there and talk a bunch of shit while you're bad, you know, and the way that he kind of framed it. And as it was going on, it's even funnier now to look back on that, because he was doing that exact thing for Magic while he was talking to me about what the Lakers were doing. He wasn't affiliated with the Lakers, to be absolutely clear, but he was doing that exact thing with Magic, which is like his entire persona.
Right? Which is Magic, why he understood it, right? Yeah.
Yeah, which is with like Magic's entire persona is like, just don't get dunked on too often.
Well, you know? That's, the getting dunked on is part of it, but it's like everything is a big deal with the Lakers, right? Like, I remember there was a reporter, there was something happened in, this is back in the Young Core years, and this is back during the Young Core years, and something happened that had caused a little controversy in Lakerland, right? And it was on First Take and it was on all the morning show, you know, when some shit happens with Lakers, like, and there was somebody I was talking to, a reporter, journalist of some sort, that there are several reporters, since the Clippers are in the same place, like they will kind of split their time, right? Like they'll go to some Lakers practices, some Clippers practices, but they will cover both teams to some extent. And they were telling me, they were laughing. They were like, this same thing, like almost the exact same thing happened with the Clippers on Tuesday. And just and nobody cared. It was
Tuesday.
Right. Well, you're right. And it was like, there's not that extra degree of scrutiny. Right. So there's going to be, you know, every, like I said, everything Lakers put out is going to have more eyeballs on it. And so there it's just being careful. Like, oh man, the creatives, the people I'm getting to work with, they're so freaking talented, man.
Yeah.
Like I'll have videos coming up. Like I know I haven't had anything come out yet, but we're working on it. I promise. Mm-hmm. But like the creative people on the Lakers side are so talented, but there's that's a reality that we deal with, right? Like we've got to be careful and respect the Lakers brand. So it's just a matter of striking that balance. And Phil had to go through that with Magic as well to a smaller degree, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's just all part of, I mean, PR is basically just getting your message out there. And also as you're preparing that message, understanding like what the response to every version of that message might be and preparing yourself as accordingly. Let's take another quick second here. We have about 5 questions left, so we'll try to race through these last 5. All right, so the next question here comes from Nick Batchelor. Hey, Anthony, can we have a replacement for Rondo if injured? If so, who should it be? They cannot replace because it's not COVID related.
Right. No, that's right. But yeah, no, if it's injury, that was the deadline. Sorry, I was thinking of something else.
Yeah. No, they can't replace Rondo. And I don't, as weird as this is for me to say, there is nobody on the market who would be able to replace Rondo. Like there aren't very many.
He's a unique player, right? He's not somebody that like is. There aren't very many guys of his style of play that are out there. Like guards have changed since he's come in.
According to guys who are available right now, not having Rondo is enough to make the Lakers worse than the Blazers right now. Can I just rant on that for a little bit?
You're welcome to say whatever you'd like, Anthony.
This is a general issue I have with the way that ESPN and TNT have kind of tailored their content, because they have some legitimately smart people associated with their shows, right? Like, I think Kenny Smith could actually really talk basketball, could be like really, really good at it, you know? Yeah. I think Dwayne Wade could be really, really good at it. Draymond Green was on a TNT show the other day. You look up and down the roster with ESPN's people. Rachel Nichols is one of the smartest people in all of media, not just like NBA media, but all of sports media. Rachel Nichols is right up there with any of them. They have any number of people who can hop in there, educate people about basketball, and still make it entertaining. But they continue to fall, like just to grab at the lowest hanging fruit and just like refuse to do anything other than, hey, get former NBA player to say stupid thing that other people want to dunk on because that gets Twitter engagement, when Twitter engagement doesn't effing matter in this stuff. Like, Twitter is such a small corner of the number of people who watch the NBA, and the NBA is too focused on Twitter. Their shows are too focused on Twitter. Like, let's actually enhance the viewing experience that comes with watching a basketball game. Let's focus on that, because that's how you actually grow your sport. Not like by having Kendrick Perkins wonder whether or not so-and-so is a man for their willingness to play in the bubble. Like, that's such horseshit. Having Channing Frye, who was like a legitimately smart dude, all they're doing is like, hey, what take could be like inflammatory enough that you could add, but you still kind of sort of believe, like, you know, those questions that would pop up there on Twitter, right? Like, what's your hottest take that you sort of believe? Mm-hmm. That's like all of their fucking production meetings. That's all of them. That's like every single meeting. It's like, all right, who can say that thing that gets a whole bunch of people all riled up on Twitter, but doesn't actually do anything to advance what's best for this sport and the league that we all care about. That's where we're sitting at. And like him, Channing Frye going out there and saying this one thing about Rajon Rondo is whatever, you know, it's stupid. It's asinine to think that this team that would basically have to go 8-0 to make it into the playoffs in the first place. And is coming back with like Nurkic, who had a very serious injury. Zach Anderson, I believe, is the other player who's like also Collins. Coming back. Collins, there you go. Who's also coming back from a serious injury. And these guys are going to step in there. And the missing piece here in the equation between what's going to separate the Lakers and the Blazers is Rajon Rondo. Like, it's so stupid. And it does nothing to actually get people excited for this bubble. Like, let's actually focus on the players who are actually going to be there and for the get people stoked on the idea that we're finally going to have basketball for the first time in a really long time. And not make it so that like Twitter trolls out there have some crap to dunk on. It's ridiculous.
Do you feel better getting that off your chest?
I do. I'm gonna have to do this now that you know the NBA is back. I'm like realizing some of the issues that I'm not thrilled to have back as part of the NBA coming back.
It is. It's also though. I think your point applies to us too. Is we've had our 3-4 month. There's no basketball to be going with, but we need to hit it hard with like talking about the on-court stuff going forward. Like we're going to, I'm really looking forward to getting back to like
sex life.
Right, man. Like that, I enjoyed our lost summer together, Anthony, but
yeah,
it's time to get back to basketball, my man.
I can't wait. But there's it's such a fascinating place that the league is going to be in right now. Like I have made the argument mm-hmm. that this is one of the most interesting playoffs, aside from it being played in a bubble in Orlando, mm-hmm. this is one of the most fascinating playoffs that 100%. We have ever seen. Ever 100%. Seen. This comes so along like once in like a generation.
Exactly, which is why we should be talking more about the basketball. Because like this is actually really cool. Like what we're about to get into. And it all starts like this episode today is kind of like this closing of, like I said, of this lost summer that we've had, because the next time we talk, it will be after we saw the Los Angeles Lakers play basketball. And
yeah.
That is a beautiful thing. And I'm very excited about that and very excited to get back to that, to where, like, let's be the change that we want. But, like, bro, you know, I don't disagree with you in any of the things that you're saying, right? Like, I'm trying to champion that cause, right? But, like, we're in a great spot, man. We cover arguably the best team in the NBA. It's like you said, all of these fascinating aspects, man, like as hard as it's been to like be like, what the hell are we going to talk about today? Like going forward, man, like
we're going to have stuff to talk about.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's go. Two more questions here. I think we have time for two more. D. Sid Smith writes, "Hey guys, what do you see as the best closing lineup for our boys in the playoffs? I think it's probably LBJ, AD, Danny Green, and KCP, with the fifth player either being Dwight, Morris or Caruso, depending on matchup. I suppose Kuzma could be in there instead of Morris, depending on how he performs over the next few weeks. I also think that those eight guys I just mentioned, plus JaVale, make up the Lakers' best nine-man rotation once the bench gets shorter for the playoffs. Your thoughts?"
I think KCP, Danny Green, LeBron, and AD are the four. In terms of the frequency of that fifth guy, who I think it's going to be most often, I think number one will be Kuz.
Mm-hmm.
I think number two would be Caruso. And I think, I don't think Morris would be, can Morris defend threes? Maybe. I'm arguing with myself right now. Morris is in the mix there, right? And I think beyond that, Dwight would probably be the fourth guy in terms of if we wanted to close games going big. Actually, no, I'd say he's third ahead of Morris. So yeah, I'd say in order, Kuz, then Caruso, then Dwight, then Morris. Beyond that, I'd be surprised if somebody's closing the game.
I like Caruso in there just for switchabilities purposes. You know, especially like if we're talking about big moments in games that really matter, like we just talked about in yesterday's show, right? If heading into those moments, LeBron or AD or Vogel says like, "Kuz, we need you in the spot," right? And he actually snaps too and is focused in those moments. I think like just in terms of what makes I'll put it this way. The best version of the Lakers is with Kuzma in that five-man lineup. I think that's right. That has the highest ceiling, right? Mm-hmm.
Although Caruso has been phenomenal.
The next best is Caruso, mm-hmm. right, in there alongside KCP, because he's big enough to also be able to switch too, mm-hmm. And smart enough on defense to where he can, even if, you know, you worry sometimes about some mismatches out there, he's going to be able to wreak havoc off of the ball defensively. To help out with some of the concerns he might have on it. And then like the thing that come playoff time that I think stops become incredibly important over the course of a 7-game series. Right. Mm-hmm. And I think Caruso, KCP, Danny Green, AD and LeBron is probably going to be one of the Lakers' best defensive lineups. So if you just need stops, I think that's the group to go with. And then also, like, you know, depending on the team that they're playing, if they're playing like a Houston and AD is quick enough to be able to get out there and switch, and then Dwight can kind of handle his own there, and you can go on the other end and really take advantage of your size advantage there, then I think there's a case to be made there. The overall point that I got to make here is that, like, there are very few situations that the Lakers just have no answer for.
That's right. That's a great point. In an upcoming show, let's talk about, like, the situations in which, because the fifth guy is a very interesting topic, I think, right? Of, like, what's this going to look like in playoff situations? I think, like, when you would have Kuzma versus when you would have Caruso, when that makes sense versus when Dwight might make sense. I think that'd be an interesting show. I'd love to discuss that.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things they're really going to be looking at hard over the next, like, 11 games that the Lakers are going to be playing.
Yeah.
You know, the three scrimmages and the eight actual games.
Yeah.
Let's go. Last question here. D Bowling writes, being more of an Eastern Conference watcher historically, I don't want you to discount Rondo's contribution. Having a player that has won and lost championships, isn't intimidated by a player or system, is going to be hard to replace. Caruso is great at what he does, but that's not making decisions. And I don't imagine that Vogel is planning to change that either. Deion Waiters or J.R. Smith. Enter Deion Waiters and J.R. Smith.
I 100% agree with that. I agree with every word he said.
I mean, it's impossible for me to, like, disagree with that and say I'm not discounting all of it. I just think we fall in love with former star player and thoroughly discount what newer guys might be able to do. Because at one point, Rondo was a newer player who wasn't able to do anything, and then quickly proved everybody wrong that like he was capable of keeping up with the big three Celtics.
Right. So the part that I would not dispute at all of that, like I said, I agreed with everything he said there, but I think it's a great point that Rondo is not afraid. Rondo, in whatever context we will find the Lakers in, will have been there, done that in his career. And he's always been fearless. He's not a guy that's going to get shaken by the moment and will be less rattled. And there are plenty of role players. Like, Alex Caruso was in the G League, like, not more than a season ago, really. Right.
Yeah.
And so in terms of it's one thing to be the role player that everybody loves and everybody's, like, super excited by how you play. It's another to, like, yo, we need you for 25 minutes in the Western Conference Finals.
Mm-hmm.
And to be able to hang there and to not be shaken and to still be the player that you're... I believe that Alex Caruso will maintain the integrity of who he is and will not... Like, will be able to mentally handle that. But I know that Rondo can do that. Now, that said, reputation is always the last thing to go. And sometimes it lasts longer than a guy's actual game does. My concerns with Rondo this year was that, like, everything he said is true, but guys get old, right? And eventually that is not true about the present day version of the player that you're talking about. So, like, all told, I do think that we can replace him, like, in a different way. I agree that you're not going to give Caruso the ball all that often, but I think that there's still a good chance that it works out as a positive for the team.
The one nice thing here is that, like, as I ranted about 10 minutes ago, there are no teams that scare me so much that I think the Lakers are going to be knocked out by in the first round, right? So if like Caruso shows up and is not ready for playoff basketball, the Lakers, I think, would still be able to survive that first round series. And then I think after that is when they're slated to get Rondo back anyway, you know?
And honestly, man, like in under normal circumstances, I would completely agree. I'm staying away from predictions as much as I can because I just think this whole thing's so weird.
It is weird, like, enough to like, yeah.
If you're looking
to make money, bet your long shots.
Right? Like there's going to be some part of this that we don't think of, or that like in any other season, I would agree with everything you said. Like this year, man, I don't know. I'm going to stay away from predictions, but I do generally agree that, that in the first round, they should be okay. But
I can't wait for like some podcast for like the Blazers is going to find like some, they're going to like find that snippet of me ranting about Channing Frye. And then they're going to say like, then they're going to clip like me saying there's nobody in the first round that I'm concerned about playing. Mm-hmm. And it's just going to be tied to my Euro stumble. And that's going to be,
it'll be the end. That's right.
Oh, I won't, there's no canceling me at this point, but
that's right. Yeah. Oh no, it'll be the culmination of everything. Right. Like, it'll be your finest moment.
All right, Pete, I think we made it.
We did it, buddy.
I think we made it. Next time you and I talk, we will have watched a Laker game. We have a fun show for you guys tomorrow to kind of walk you through how teams have kind of prepared for this bubble and how teams might be handling all that. So look forward to that. And then Pete and I are going to be recording after the Lakers scrimmage on Thursday evening. So I do want to take a second to thank you guys because we got a ton of support. There are still questions left unanswered on our iTunes mailbag. You guys kept those things coming. The show has, you know, obviously everybody took a bit of a step back, but we got a ton of support from start to finish. Remember, we talked about Built Bar. They're still trying to refill their stocking, stockages of bars because all you guys showed out and sold out of those things and helped us support that those companies that supported us. Let's continue doing that with Rock Auto, and let's continue doing that throughout this entire bubble playoff and continue to stay safe so we can all enjoy this together. We came this far together. Let's continue to enjoy the fruits of our loins here. The rewards of actually having made it through the last like 4 months. I can't believe it's been 4 months.
Yeah, man. No, this feels really good. It's holy, I tweeted crap today that this is the first day where it's like, oh, it feels like basketball's close. And
yeah,
I'm really excited. I hope everyone stayed safe. Thank you for sticking by us, and hopefully a lot of fun and a lot of arguing and a lot of just liveliness coming up in a way where it's been very much missed. So hooray, basketball's back.
All right, stay safe out there, everybody. Please, I cannot say this hard. Like, I cannot plead with you enough to say, just please stay safe out there. Make somebody else's day. Have a great one, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.